Hello?
Okay, folks, we're going to get started. There's a small fee if you sit in the back of the room. That's a joke. We're going to get launched because we're running just a few minutes late, and we're going to move very quickly. We have a very busy schedule today that I want to walk you through because there are a couple of sessions that are closed to BC members only. I'd like to have us start the recording, please. Okay, we are being recorded. My name is Marilyn Cade. I'm the chair of the business constituency. I'd like to welcome all of you to the business constituency meeting. We will not do formal introductions because we are going to move so quickly through our agenda. But when you speak, please announce yourself by name and affiliation. So, for instance, I'm Marilyn Cade. I'm the chair of the business constituency. So for the purposes of the recording and the transcript, folks who are either listening to us to participate remotely or are going to be reading our transcript later will be able to know who's speaking. Today's agenda is going to start with a very brief reference to a new piece of collateral, a BC brochure that is being launched, and I will actually turn to Chris to do that. It is going to be very brief, and we will be handing out copies to all of you who are here. We're then going to focus on the discussion led by Steve Del Bianco and the two counselors, John Berard, who will be participating remotely, and Zaid Jamil, and with participation by members. This is going to be a fast-paced walkthrough. Thank you. And we have some particular issues that have arisen since we've arrived here at in Dakar that we'll be teeing up. We'll talk about them on policy discussion as much as we can, and we may be reconvening the members for a members huddle to deal with topics we're not able to get through. We'll spend a few minutes prepping for the board meeting. Today, the BC members and any of their direct guests have a hour-long session with the ICANN board. In that prep session, we'll take you through the topics, what we've done so far in terms of prep for it. That is a CSG session with the board, so we share that with two other constituencies. We'll be leaving this room, and you cannot leave anything behind because it will not be locked. And we'll be gone, the members will be gone for an hour and 5 minutes. We'll be back and resume our meeting where we'll hear from Chris Chatlow. Where we'll hear from Chris Chatlow, who is our Vice Chair of Finance and Operations, and then we will have guests, and that is the Nominating Committee past chair and the new chair, and we will be talking with them, Sarah Deutsch, who is one of our two new Nominating Committee elected representatives, is here with us today. We'll be talking with them about the ATRT request for changes in the operating procedures of the Nominating Committee. We will then have a short discussion on ethics and integrity at ICANN, which will include debriefing from the board discussion and a discussion about the launch of our own working group on ethics and integrity in the BC. That decision was taken on a recent BC members call, and I am putting that working group together. It will be a cross working group. That is not a policy issue. It's open to all members, but we will be dealing with it in specific working sessions, probably 2 one-hour calls, rather than trying to shoehorn it into our other working sessions. And then we will close our meeting. You have about an hour's break, and after that, we meet as the CSG. And, Benny, can I just ask you to remind us of where the CSG meeting is this afternoon? Yeah. I'll come back to that later if you don't mind. The CSG begins at 2:30. It is not in this room. I think it's in C56, but the point is it's not in this room. You'll need to grab lunch fairly quickly. in order to come back to CSG. At CSG, we're going to have a short session where we will debrief from some of the challenging situations that the CSG feels we are facing. The cross-constituency leadership will be briefing on that. We'll then be joined by Xavier Calvez, the new Chief Financial Officer of ICANN, and then by the full contractual and compliance team at 15:30. We will then have a short closed discussion, which we will close the transcript and ask to be members only in the CSG, and then we will conclude at 14:30 today. At 14:45, the meeting between the board and the GAC starts, and we will move very quickly from that room, the CSG room, to the room that the board and the GAC are in so that all of you will be able to hear what is going on in the discussions between the board and the GAC. So with that, I'm going to ask Chris, if I might, and I'll hand the brochures out. Chris, if I might turn to you to do a quick introduction.
Thanks, Marilyn. Ron's actually handing the brochures out now, so thanks.
And the sheets.
Great, thank you very much. I did a brief explanation in the CSG breakfast, so apologies to some of you who have heard that already. But this is the first edition of the ICANN, the BC newsletter, and we're very proud of it. It's been a lot of work putting it together, and as I said before, the BC did have one some time ago. And the copies of that's on the website, on the internet. But what we wanted to do was, as much as possible, a newsletter that we can do for our members to look at. It's equally for outreach, to be able to hand out to other constituencies and really show something about the VC and our news and our updates, and I can just whiz through that in a second. And as I said before, to actually, in the centre pages, it was deliberate to try and put something in it that was actually going to be useful to people. And we were aware that members of the community, both new members of the community and indeed more experienced members of the community, that weren't aware of the structure. So inside that, we've got the multi-stakeholder model on the left-hand side and the overall ICANN with the photograph of the board, and on the right-hand side, the GNSO Council. On the introduction, we've got one of the more important, the news from the chair, and please do have a read through that. About the BC members that were in Nairobi just recently, just a month ago, and some an update of news from Singapore on the road to Dakar, where of course we are now. Steve's written us an article on developing the BC GNSO policy agenda at ICANN, and if I may say so, Steve, I like in your opening paragraph where you've consolidated, and that's very important, about the BC simple mission, the development of business via an internet that is stable, secure and reliable whilst promoting consumer confidence. And I think that's a very good, succinct way we can look at things. Non-com appointees, Sarah and Wado, so that's good. The centre, I've talked about an article about governance at ICANN, the affirmation of commitment, and in the next edition we hope to follow that up with other articles. The subject that I'm close to, that's the BC effort, the budget and the operating plan, and I'll be talking more about this afternoon, and then an opportunity for members to have their little window in the brochure and the back page. Some photographs of the BC at work and a play, as it were, a little more information about Benny, our secretary, and the executive committee. So it's both of the sites, both for our members and for people that are thinking of becoming members and the general community. Good. So we've got plenty of copies of this, and that outreach is the purpose of it. So if any members or anybody wants to take away many copies, I see Martin's just grabbed 30 copies, I think, for an event that you're hoping to have, aren't you? So thanks very much for doing that, and that's good. So if you've got an event or anything coming up in the next 3 months, then come and see me, take away copies and hand them out. Thank you.
So, Chris, I am just going to ask you, if you don't mind, to give me about 25 brochures so we can prepare them for the board to hand in. We'll do that in just a couple of minutes. When we do prep for the board session. But I'd like to turn to Steve Del Bianco. I just want to mention that we're spreading Steve's leadership opportunity across the next two sessions. So you're going to do an overview and briefing, and then we will also talk about, during the board prep session, there's a particular discussion with the board about the new GTLD program. So we'll go back to you during that session for that, if that's okay with you. And sorry, can I just do one thing? There is a sign-in sheet being passed around, so if you don't mind, if you're in the audience, there should be one, and there's one coming around here. We would appreciate it.
All right, thanks. Steve Del Bianco, NetChoice, and the Vice Chair for Policy. Zahid and John Brard and I put together the typical thing we do for these meetings, which is a list of key policy issues that are in front of us this week. And we start with a discussion of the council agenda. We always talk about the public forum coming up on Thursday and the topics that are lined up. And we also wanted to also cover some other issues that are currently active right now, because a lot of BC members are on working groups, are on affirmation review teams. And I know Jeff said he'd come in at about 11 to talk about that. So, Chris, if you could, the first slide just repeats that BC mission statement, which is always great to have in front of us. And I did start the article in the newsletter that way to remind us again what our mission's all about. It's way broader than new GTLDs, although that has occupied us like nothing else over the past year and a half, and it's appropriate time for us to start to take a broader view of all the issues in front of us. Chris, if you go to the second slide, it's the council meeting topics, and I'm going to rely heavily on Zahid for help on this. Council is tomorrow, and it starts with a public forum of council where each of the stakeholder groups are asked to stay, each of the constituencies are asked to say a thing or two. And Marilyn, I gave staff your name for that yesterday. They've allocated an hour for that, and I'm not familiar with that as a format. What are they expecting, and what do we want to do with that opportunity tomorrow?
So one of the things we need to talk about is whether we're going to do anything with it. Constituencies and stakeholder groups do not report to council. We have councillors who are elected to represent the views of the BC. What this seems to be is a suggestion that we report on what we do during Constituency Day. My negotiation with Stefan is that we would talk about any changes in our policy priorities that took place between Saturday and Wednesday, right? So my recommendation is that I would say two sentences as the chair, and I would turn to Zahid, who is our counselor here, and to John, and we would ask them to report, because that is their job to represent us. I myself we'll talk about this later, but I'm not comfortable with turning the council session into a briefing on the broader work of the stakeholder groups. So that would be my proposal, Steve, and that would allow us to focus on GTLD policy but continue to strengthen our counselor or yourself's leadership in that area.
No, I think that makes sense. It didn't really fit at the front end of a controversial agenda. John, is that you?
Oh, yeah. I'm somewhat discouraged by the way that this has evolved. The rather formal request that was extended to you, Marilyn, was the result of a conversation that we had in our Sunday our debrief session in Singapore, in which there was general agreement as to the need for the council, the public council meeting, to be more interactive. I'm dismayed that this ultimately became a formal request of constituency leadership to participate in some reporting scheme, when in fact all the suggestions that day in Singapore were to adjust the public meeting so that there would be more reason for members of the community at every level and from every corner to participate. So, you know, what was a well-intended suggestion to invigorate the public meeting of the council has become, you know, just another line item in what I fear will be a an overly architected and potentially not as interesting as I had hoped approach. So, you know, I apologize if this thing has morphed into something that it was never intended to be, but goal was to invigorate the meeting, not to create another formal step.
So, John,
I will be speaking to Stefan and Mary and Jeff about this after the public meeting.
John, it's Marilyn. I really welcome your comment and your explanation. I think the members probably do as well. My suggestion to Stefan when he talked to me about it, he didn't have a clear understanding of what you were proposing. So perhaps you could, you know, talk to him ahead of time, the two of you, the three of you, and also just propose, even in your, you could explain what your goal was, and it can be adjusted. It's a pilot, yeah?
Very much so. So, you know, I would encourage you not to, I mean, I would encourage the BC not to, I appreciate the spirit in which the invitation was extended. When I saw the communications from Jeff, I was a little surprised. Figured the course was out of the barn. We'd fix it later. But you know, if well, I just don't know what to do with it at this point. I don't think it's going to give us the intended outcome we had sought, and we'll just adjust for the next time.
Thank you, John. The council agenda for tomorrow has what they call council public forum. It's scheduled for an hour from 2 to 3 o'clock. And then there's a break, and then the regular council agenda business begins at 3:30. So there's really 90 minutes allocated for this tomorrow. And it's not an open mic. It's an item-by-item bullet where each of these stakeholder groups will say something. It's called a presentation, and I wondered whether we're aware, are the other stakeholder groups going to actually have slides where they present their broader agenda for the consumption of the community at large? Do you know exactly what format the other folks are using?
Talking to me, Steve?
Yeah, that question's for anyone who has spoken with other folks like the IPC and ISPC. So we don't know at this point what the format of that is, but let's never waste a good opportunity to present the broader interests of the BC, and I guess between the leaders of the BC we'll figure out some way to fill that space. But clearly, it's a precursor to the structured agenda of the council that will follow after that, because you might make a broad statement on all the things the BC stands for and all that we work on, but then we take this break, come back to council, and it's a very TikTok agenda.
It's Marilyn. There's a really serious tension that exists right now that it's within the council itself about how work is going to be done, and I think that that's not the place for us to address it. But I also think that we should, why don't we take this up, we can chat about it at lunchtime maybe with Saeed and keep in touch with John by email. And then at the CSG, we can also send around and update Steve maybe to BC Private about what the proposal is. That all right?
Yeah, because, and again, if John's right about this, then the audience is the broader community that we hope will have come into the room. And it's a chance to introduce them to the constituencies. If that's the case, then we don't have to get into too many details. As you say, point to the brochures on the back table. All right, so why don't we move to the substantive agenda of council. And the first item that I flagged for us to discuss today is it's item 4 on the council's agenda. It's been around since the San Francisco meeting. And this is a motion put forward by Christine Rosetta, the IPC, and Deborah Hughes with Red Cross and the nonprofit constituency. And it's a motion that to try to come up with a process by which ICANN can amend the agreement with the registrars, the registrar accreditation agreement. And the items on the amendment agenda aren't part of the motion. The motion is really just says, what's the process by which the registrars will negotiate with ICANN, and what is the involvement of other constituencies, that is to say, everyone other than the registrars? What is their involvement at the stages of the negotiation, or perhaps even just getting reports on what items were considered to be negotiated and how that works out? You wouldn't think we would be so wrapped around the axle over a process unless you were aware of the kind of things that should be worked into the RAA. And I'll just list for you 3 or 4 of the high priority items that are supposed to be negotiated in the RAA. One is whether registrars have a duty to investigate malicious conduct and try to articulate that duty to investigate, to report, and take action if they're given information about malicious conduct at a domain that that registrar controls. Another is the obligation to designate and publish a technically competent point of contact who's available 24/7. That's a high priority item that has already been identified by GNSO. Another is an obligation of privacy and proxy services to do the relay and reveal. Susan and Bill, and I know you're heavily into that on the Who Is Review team, including whether or not you would cancel a registrant's account. Would a registrar be forced to cancel a registrant's account if they did not honor a request for revealing information? And finally, I'll just throw one more in, which is to clarify what are the registrar's responsibilities in a UDRP proceeding. So these are 4 or 5 of the 60 items listed in the document that council put out several months ago on, it's sort of a to-do list, all the things we need to do with the RAA. Our problem now is we've reached an impasse in that the registrars have said that they're going to work with staff on coming up with ways that their contract, their RAA, can be amended to accommodate these priorities, but they don't want to do so under the, say, the visibility of folks like the business constituency or IPC, and they don't necessarily want the details of the negotiation, things which were considered and rejected, the compromises that were discussed. They don't want that to necessarily be exposed in a reporting way, in a public and transparent way. And that impasse reached another sort of breakpoint this weekend when I heard during the work sessions that contract parties are sort of together on this. The registrars and registries both believe that the process of negotiating a contract with ICANN is not something they want to do in the full glare of, in the full light of those of us that consider ourselves having a stake in what's in those contracts. And because of the way voting is structured in council, if the contract parties are holding firm on this, they will prevail. It's just the way the votes work. So I'm going to turn to Zahid in a moment to sort of walk us through the politics of where we stand now, because we debated this extensively at the San Francisco meeting, and a number of us spoke at the mic, and our councilors were articulate about it. And then in the intervening time, we deferred this vote until we could have it at a public place like this. So it's possible we'll have a public discussion tomorrow, but it's also possible this thing could get defeated right away. And the registrars claim that defeat of this motion doesn't mean they're not going to negotiate a new RAA. It just says they're going to work in a bilateral mechanism with staff to negotiate an agreement. And when it's done, I presume we'll all have an opportunity to comment on the new RAA, but they just don't want to be subject to sort of transparency as to the negotiations along the way. Zahid?
Thank you, Steve. Zahid Jamil. So the The history behind this has been drawn out by Steve a little bit. Let me just say that the RAPWG had two processes that they had recommended. There was a process which had strong support, and that was process A. And most of the people in the most of the folks in the RA working group had agreed to that. But the process B was the one that Christina put forward, which had less support and would have been more palatable for the contracted parties' houses. And that was what was put forward in San Francisco. But that was rejected by the contracted parties' house by blocking it in San Francisco. And so the resolution that Christina has put up, again, this time, waters that down even further. It actually takes out the requirement that their report should come back to the GNSO Council, and that the GNSO Council should look in and have transparency into what is happening in the negotiations between staff and the contracted parties of the registrars. And instead, is simply saying, and this is the change so that everybody knows what the difference is between San Francisco and today, requests the ICANN Office of the General Counsel to review these changes and so that is the level of transparency that has been requested. Also, certain timelines which were tighter earlier have been loosened by Christina, and more time has been given. So those are the basic changes. But as we heard on Saturday, the contracted parties' house is also going to be rejecting this motion. They will be voting against this. So despite the efforts of giving them the software option in San Francisco and a more diluted option now, there doesn't seem to be any movement on this. And as many who were in the GAC meeting with the GNSO the other day would remember, this issue was also raised in the GAC GNSO meeting, and the GAC wasn't pleased to hear that the registrars, not only on the law enforcement issue but also on this, were not budging. So I'll stop there, and so it's going to be an interesting day tomorrow to see what happens on this motion.
Zaid, are we clear what our counselors' voting positions and voting strategy will be as different amendments are offered and motions come up?
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, Steve. If there is a friendly amendment, which is what Christina has been asking, well, forget about the fact that what we're proposing. Do you have any alternatives? We've been waiting for friendly amendments. We haven't seen anything on the list yet. But if in case that does come up, we will be voting en bloc with the IPC as well. And I think that we are ready for that, so it's not a problem. And basically, we want this resolution to go through. So our strategy for voting will be to try and get it through and to vote yes.
I wanted to relay to the folks who weren't here over the weekend that the registrars and registries did have a couple of ideas that might come up as an alternative. Like you said, it hasn't been circulated in writing, but it may show up tomorrow. One idea was to thank everybody for the involvement, but we're going to work with staff and report out on the RA we negotiate. And I really believe we would probably vote no on that. And the second idea, which was circulated by the registry constituency, by Jeff Newman, is he pointed to this registry agreement for the new GTLDs. It's part of the new GTLD guidebook. And he said there's a whole section in there that says how one amends a contract. It's section 7.6. It's 2 pages long. And it's a pretty detailed process by which a contract with the registry can get amended after you sign your new GTLD. And he said, why don't we just change the word registry to registrar and adopt that entire section as the guideline, the process by which we amend agreements? Well, that sounds eminently reasonable, but only if you forget the fact of how we got the new GTLD agreement. The new GTLD agreement that this Section 7.6 lives in is an agreement that's taken a couple of years of public comment, consultation, board and staff, and negotiation to derive. So the new registry agreement about which 7.6 does amendments is an agreement that was subject to the very transparent multi-stakeholder public comment process that we're asking for with respect to the new RAA. So ironically, with the new GTLD program, we've created a new agreement, and it's voluntary. Nobody has to sign the new registry agreement if they don't want to run a new registry in the new GTLD program. So that's a carrot. If you want the new program, here's the new agreement. So that's certainly working for the registry side, but the registrars have no such new agreement to sign. In other words, we missed the opportunity to build a new RAA into the new GTLD program. Instead, we use the old RAA, and eventually we'll amend it. And that old RAA covers the sale, distribution, and management of new domain names. So too late, sorry, we missed the chance to do that, and we can't induce registrars to grab a new agreement that was worked out in a public process. So that means that we do have a we've come to a point where I don't think that it's reasonable. I don't think we should allow the contract parties to represent that Jeff Newman's idea is a reasonable compromise, because it misses the point that the amendment to an agreement process starts with an agreement that has never been subject to the public comment process. So it doesn't fit. After we get through this process, process B that the amendment calls for, then it would be appropriate to adopt Section 7.6 and jam it into the RAA for future amendments. But we don't think that process is going to work for this one. Marilyn?
Steve, would you add a little color and entertainment to this discussion by doing just a quick, or ask Saeed to do, just a quick recalling of what he said during the GAC council interactions about the importance of the RAA and how important that discussion and the LEA's discussion was to the, but I just wanted to focus on the RAA, how important that discussion was to the GAC.
So the RAA amendments have included in them many things that the law enforcement would want. Won't go into details as to what they are, but there were, say, if you could bifurcate them into two parts, there's the standalone recommendations that the GAC supporting the LAE law enforcement authorities had wanted to push through, and they had been given a commitment. I know I'm focusing a little more on that for the moment, Marilyn, but that helps explain it. And so the GAC had wanted the our registrars to try and adopt these. It didn't happen. They were given a commitment with the registrars that this would happen in Singapore, apparently. And the registrars, without explaining what they were trying to do, had put a motion into the council meeting just before Dakar and pushed for this, two meetings before that, and pushed for this resolution to be passed. That resolution was not acceptable to the law enforcement authorities, and as we have seen in the GAC meeting, was totally not acceptable to the GAC or the members of the GAC either. That is one part of some of the amendments that are being requested for the RAA. When it was raised in the GAC meeting that the RAA amendments also were being blocked, it has become sort of a combined, combustible issue before the GAC that the GNSO is unable to deliver to the community many of the changes because of the blocking that is done by the registrars. And that has become a serious concern for the GAC and also other people in the community, that is this a structural problem within the GNSO? Why is it that the contract parties' houses or just the registrars are able to block any movement on the RAA? So it's really sort of blown up into a much higher issue, and I think that's why there will be many eyes watching what takes place when this motion is put to the vote on Wednesday.
Thanks, Zaid. And one final item on this one is we need to keep in mind our mission that was on the first slide, and we do need to get a revised registrar agreement. We need a new RAA. So I think that as we vote tomorrow, we need to stand on principle, but at the end of the day, we do want staff to begin moving ahead to negotiate with the registrars on a new RAA. I'd like to know, will that happen regardless of what council does tomorrow? In other words, whether we come up with process A, process B, or no process at all, isn't staff going to be negotiating with the registrars anyway over the months to come?
That's right. So that process happens independently of this altogether. The purpose of this motion is to create transparency in that negotiation process.
Bill Smith, PayPal.
Sure, this is Bill Smith. I think in the spirit of cooperation that the registries have shown through the their adoption of those three of the 12 law enforcement suggestions, that we perhaps could work with some other interested parties and produce a new RAA with the suggestions that we have been putting in and deliver it and say, there, it's done. You don't need to negotiate it. And while this is somewhat, I'm being somewhat facetious, I actually am questioning why the contracted parties are allowed to negotiate with ICANN on this. This, we are running the domain name system for the Internet, ICANN is, and this organization supports it. I know I really have not participated in any other organization where a service provider, registrars and registries, in such an entity are allowed to unilaterally negotiate behind closed doors on these things. Typically, these are standard form agreements that the community develops or the administrative organization develops, and anyone who wishes to participate in that community is obligated to sign the standard form contract. There are no one-offs. There's no nothing. I know there's a bunch of history here on that, but this is a significant problem, and to answer your question, is this a structural problem? Absolutely.
So I'm just going to, it's Meryl, I'm going to quickly say that actually the constituency that wrote the transfers, the first transfers policy at ICANN would be called the business constituency, because the registrars were in the same kind of lockdown that they are now. And two or three of the good guys came to us and convinced us in various discussions that we should take the lead. I'm intrigued by Bill's comment and asked maybe if we could park it and talk more about it. Steve?
All right, let's do that. So tomorrow, we'll park it and talk more about it later, but tomorrow's voting is about a transparency element to the process. It's not about a go, no-go at working out a new RAA. And even if we don't achieve the transparency, we'll have the opportunity to comment on, suggest changes to, and council will eventually vote on the final contract, as well as the full community would vote on that contract. And it's many months away before it comes out of the other process. So tactics like the one that Bill just mentioned might have to be done in parallel to an opaque or transparent process. Another idea is to take the dozens of items, the 60 items that we're looking for in amendments, and bring them up a few at a time so the council can, for the first time, vote on saying this is an amendment we want in there. Because I don't believe council has approved that entire document of high and medium priority RAA items. It was a product of a working group at council. But since council hasn't voted on it and probably could not get a vote on the whole thing up or down, an idea that was suggested to us by someone who knows a lot about process here said break it up into pieces and bring those pieces in front of council in months ahead. So is any piece of it, if you recall I mentioned earlier, with relay and reveal obligations. If that piece gets approved by council, then it gets fed into the negotiation that staff is having with the registrars. Are there any other comments on this agenda item?
May I ask, Saeed, I heard from the IPC this morning on that breaking it up that they may have reservations. I didn't discuss it any further. I said I would hand it off to the counselors and you to explore, but maybe for the CSG call, Zaid, if you and Steve could have a couple of private minutes on that.
Great. Any other questions, John? Okay, let's go.
One thing I would ask, Bill, do you have specific organizations that operate as you say, and we could offer as analogies in conversation or discussion?
Sure. This is Bill Smith. The World Wide Web Consortium has a standard form contract. OASIS, which also does technical standards, to the extent that the IETF has a sort of membership, but that they have patent policies, IP policies, they are identical. And other organizations that I have formed, membership organizations, have standard form contracts that must be executed. Now, when it is possible when new members come in and things like that, that if there are objectionable items, they are occasionally changed, but then it goes back out and everyone is subject to the same terms.
And it's the members of each of these organizations in whole that agree to the standard form of those contracts.
John, we're going to have Bill put in writing what he just gave us and circulate it to the BC private list so we can begin to work on that in parallel, so, since it won't be in play tomorrow, John. Okay?
No, I'm sure it won't. Right. Okay, thanks, Bill.
Thank you. Item 5 on the agenda for tomorrow's council meeting is changes to the policy development process. There's a 160-page document where the policy development process work team came up with some specific improvements to the policy development process. Two examples are codifying practices for the running of a working group. Another is standardizing the requests that one puts together when they want staff to do an issues report. And we had work team members. Marilyn was on it. John Berard, you were on it. I believe that Mike Rodenbaugh was also a member of that team. So unless anybody has any other comments on it, I think this is a slam dunk vote yes for adopting those changes tomorrow for both Zaheed and John. Any other comments on that? Let's move to the next one. It's item 6, which is only a status report, not a vote, which is a discussion of how we're doing and figuring out how we are going to do cross-community working groups. That's where folks from the ALAC and the CCNSO work with folks from the GNSO to come up with the cross-community consensus. John Berard's going to be working on that one. John, do you have anything to add to item 6 on the agenda?
No, it's fairly straightforward.
Great. Item 7 is the geographical regions. There will be a draft report presented tomorrow, but there will be no vote necessarily from councilors. And there's also a motion scheduled on doing a charter for an outreach task force. Are you prepared to say a little bit about it, Zed?
Thank you. The draft motion is on the motions page. What I'd like to say is that it does actually sort of try and create a task force for outreach, and it has various objectives. I would encourage members to go look at those various objectives. Some of those objectives, very sort of on a very macro level, you might see that involve this task force getting in the work of starting to manage the outreach, even when it concerns stakeholder groups. And so I know that Maryland has opposed this historically, and there have been some BC positions previously where we've said that we should be doing our own outreach, and so there may be modifications we might like to see here. I would encourage members to look at this report, the draft charter, which has to be approved in the Wednesday meeting. Marilyn, would you like to say something on this?
Very quickly. The position we've taken in the past is that we expect ICANN to develop the general information documents and to translate those. So the information that can be used by everybody to do outreach for participation. We expect ICANN to support us to help to customize materials that we can use to better inform businesses and to do business recruitment. The model that is being proposed is a model we rejected once before, where ICANN would pre-identify emerging leaders, put them into specialized training, fund them, pick who the leaders of the future will be in different groups. There's a confusion between the concept of capacity building, as we think of it, and picking who the leaders of the organization will be. I think there's also an issue about where the funding goes. We approved a request from the BC for a $20,000 pilot fund to enable us to develop and customize our own recruitment, et cetera. So think of the newsletter as an example of the kind of thing that we would do, but that ICANN would be responsible for the central, general, here's how ICANN works kind of thing. Do look at it. I'll write some comments. I think I'd like to defer the vote because the other problem with it is I don't think we can agree to have ICANN staff and a central committee decide who the emerging leadership is going to be in the organization.
Has this motion to approve the charter been deferred so far? Are you aware?
No, not yet.
Why is it not even on the agenda? It's on the motions.
It's a new one that came in.
New one that came in. So Marilyn is making a suggestion that the BC ask for a deferral.
Let's do that. But isn't there also a question of it's too late to add a new motion, isn't it? We don't need to debate that.
I can ask Lynn for that clarification, but I think it may have made it in time. Otherwise, it wouldn't be on the motion list. One, she wouldn't have put it there if that wasn't the case, if it hadn't come in time. But we can ask that. In any case, we may defer it. But I'd like to say that it would be we have done this in the past in certain motions. We've deferred them. But then when it came up again, we didn't have any response because we didn't have any members sort of providing any input. So I would sort of caution that you have the members provide the input. An example would be the LEA resolution. So we had nothing substantive to say when it got deferred and came back up again. So just a word of caution there.
Thank you. And the last item on tomorrow's agenda is after they seat the new councillors, there will be a vote for the new council chair. I think we only have one candidate. We can discuss that maybe at the CSG meeting when we're all together because he's coming to that meeting. So why don't we cover it then? Okay? That's it for council tomorrow. Any other opportunities or discussion of council agenda? Great. Let's move to the policy participation. Chris, if you don't mind bringing up the next slide. Thank you. This is just a quick list of the 7 active groups and affirmation review teams and BC members that are active on them. The fourth one down is the Who Is Review Team, and I'm glad to say we can now add Bill Smith of PayPal as a BC member on that list. He's on my slide now that Bill Smith is in. So this is an opportunity to ask from the folks that are on here if they have any comments they'd like to add about the current work underway, whether you need to continue to recruit additional BC members to join you on those work teams. And is Mikey...
Hey, Steve, John.
Yes, John?
The slides are not progressing on the Adobe Connect.
Thanks. Ben is going to handle that right now. The first item on there, John, for your information, was inter-register transfers, or IRTP, and it was Part B. And that's concluded, but there is ongoing concern from Mikey O'Connor, the BC member who's active in that group, who says that he needs reinforcement on the email list to be sure that things are implemented the way that the BC designed them. And Sarah, I know you corresponded with Mikey on that and asked him how you could weigh in. Is there anything you could share with us on the current status of the IRTP Part B? Thanks, Sarah. There's a brand new group on IRTP Part C, and we currently have three volunteers from the BC that have joined: Mikey O'Connor, Chris Chaplow, and Phil Corwin. So that's three. That's good representation on there. We'll designate one of those three to be the BC rapporteur for that group. But I believe you'll start to meet in November. Is that right, Phil? Chris?
I'm also
in November. Is that how you be the council liaison? Great. Thank
yes,
you.
Chris Chaplin speaking. I don't think we've got a date yet for the first call, if I remember rightly, but it might even be the end of October. I think there's one coming fairly soon. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Next item on there is Consumer Trust Competition.
Steve, sorry, just one point I forgot to say. They have announced that in the initial calls of the IRTPC, they will be doing an overview of the IRTP in general, so to make it easier for newcomers to join at this stage. That could be of interest to anybody here. Thanks.
And Phil, anything to add from your part on that? No question. On IRTP Part C, thank you for joining that group. Appreciate that. Next item up is a working group that's underway for Consumer Trust Competition and Choice. John Berard and I are very active on that group, and we'll be doing a full presentation with public discussion tomorrow at 1 o'clock. The timing isn't very good, I realize that, and many of you will miss it. But I gave a brief run-through of that presentation on Saturday, and I can summarize it for you in just a few moments, if you wish. This is... The affirmation of commitment says that 1 year after the first new GTLD goes in the route, ICANN needs to do yet another review team. A review team that will look at the extent to which the new GTLDs have increased consumer trust, competition, and choice in domain names. So in the Cartagena meeting, the board approved unanimously a motion that says, why don't we start now to define what those words mean in the context of DNS and new GTLDs, and maybe even come up with metrics and measures for what consumer trust, competition, and choice are. Because if a cross-community consensus can give the board advice on that, well, then the board can tell management, here are the kinds of things we want you to manage and measure towards so that the review will go well a year afterwards. So again, this is an affirmation review that won't even begin until probably December of 2013. It won't conclude till the end of 2014, right? So we're trying to plant some seeds now for definitions that work. This is in the sweet spot of the business constituency with respect to the consumer trust and competition. That's part of our mission statement. So we have taken a very active role at trying to come up with the right kinds of definitions of those three terms. And if you wish, I can just read you the definitions that we've proposed. See what you think, whether we're on the right track. The first thing we did was to define the word consumer to be users and registrants. I should leave business out of that. But the word consumer, when it comes to consumer choice and consumer trust, means users and registrants of the domain name system. Okay, so the definitions that we've come up with so far. For competition, we said that competition will be evident in the quantity and diversity of GTLDs, the TLD registry operators, and the registrars. So competition will be evident if there's lots more GTLDs. Well, of course, there will be. And taking a look at the quantity and diversity of suppliers who run those TLDs. So undoubtedly, we will have greater amounts of quantity and diversity, but the challenge is to define what are the goals. Is it simply to double or triple the number of suppliers? Will that create an adequate measure of competition? I actually don't think this is going to be controversial, and it won't be very difficult for the community to meet this one. The definition of consumer trust, we've come up with a two-part definition. It says it's the confidence that registrants and users can have in the consistency of name resolution. And, you'll love this one, the degree of confidence among registrants and users that a TLD registry operator is fulfilling their proposed purpose and they're complying with ICANN policies and applicable national laws. So that's confidence that if .bikes became a new GTLD and it promised to limit itself to vendors that sell bicycles, that's a promise they made. They did a community-based application. A year later, it's important to have confidence that if I bought a name in .bikes, delbianco.bikes, that I would have confidence that they're sticking to their registry restrictions, that the terms of service that I signed up for are being enforced. And that confidence then helps my business grow and helps consumers trust that delbianco.bikes is a legitimate bike store. So that's the idea of holding to the purpose. We did have to fight to add the definition also of complying with ICANN policies. You would think that would be easy, but it wasn't. And it was controversial to add the phrase applicable national laws. And we did that to give full due respect to another stakeholder at ICANN, governments and the GAC. These are draft definitions. They may not survive this working team process, and they may not be adopted in 2014 when the affirmation review team comes together. But at the very least, we're trying to set the table. There should be a lively discussion tomorrow because folks within the working group would like to take out this reference to national laws, which is mystifying to me. One other definition is choice. And for that, our definition says, consumer choice would be evident in the range of options available to registrants and users for domain scripts and languages, and for TLDs that offer choices as to the proposed purpose and integrity of their domain name registrants. So the idea is that a business, an entity seeking to register a name, would have more choices than they have today, choices that are appropriate for the purpose they want a domain name for, and that fit the scripts and languages of the audience they want to serve. And this might be an area where the new GTLD program could come up short, because it doesn't look as if we're going to have as much in non-Latin scripts and non-English languages as we'd hoped. So this is the third metric. Are there any questions about the Consumer Choice and Competition Working Group?
I don't have a question, but I'd like to express a word of appreciation, not only for those of you here who've been working on it, but for Philip Shepherd, one of our members from AIM, and former chair of the DNSO Council, and a mainstay in leadership in helping to define measurable terms that we could all begin to work on. So thank you very much, Philip.
Yeah, Philip, the definitions still look pretty close to what we drafted. Great work. John Berard, you're really active on this group. Anything you want to add?
No, except that I was a bit surprised in the CCNSO-GNSO Council meeting yesterday to hear that even though the board resolution in December out of Cartagena instructed or asked for advice from organizations including the CCNSO, that they really weren't even aware of it, hadn't moved on it, and didn't think that it was something that they would devote resources to. So it puts even a bit more pressure on the working team from the GNSO to be diligent, because our work product may wind up being a stand-in for others who are not moving on the matter. So it's an important deal because it speaks, I think, to the core audience of ICANN and the business constituency, which is the actual use and registration of domain names.
Thanks, John. You're right about that, and we'll make sure that the CCNSO knows they are welcome to participate in the work team. The next item up is the Who Is Review Team. Susan Kawaguchi of Facebook, Bill Smith, PayPal, Lynn Goodendorfer on there. Do you want to give any report on the current progress of your WHOIS review team?
Susan does.
Susan, just a quick one.
I thought he should. We've spent 3 days at this meeting starting Saturday, all day Sunday, and about 6 or 7 hours yesterday, and really pounded a lot of things out. I think we've got a good start on recommendations for data accuracy, and the proxy and privacy recommendations are still work in progress, but there's a lot of issues there. So we are still planning to have this report, the draft report, done by November 30th, and so we have a lot of work ahead of us. Is there anything you want to add?
No, the only thing I'd add is that it was yesterday in particular was a tough day. But I still think the group is working well together, if at times frustrating. And I believe we're going to come out with a set of consensus recommendations.
Thank you very much. Jeff Brueggemann won't be here till 11 to talk about the security and stability review team, and we don't have anybody here from the last two. I'm going to break this discussion now so that we can prepare for the upcoming joint meeting with the CSG and the board. Marilyn has some questions that the board has posed for us, and as we talk through the answers to those questions, we're going to return to some other policy documents that we've prepared for today.
And we may end up asking for very brief written paragraph reports that we could add in on some of the topics that we aren't able to cover. So to remind members and others that this meeting will be a meeting of the BC members and their member companies that are members of your association that are eligible, then you could bring them in. But it is a closed meeting. The meeting, however, for those of you who are listening who aren't members or are in the room, the meeting will be broadcast, and there will be a transcript from it. So it's just that the interaction is limited to the members of the CSG. There'll be a head table. At the head table will be the chair and the vice chair and the CEO and president, and the chairs are their designee of each of the three constituencies. This is the second in an effort to have a more substantive dialogue between the CSG, between the stakeholders and the board. We had proposed three topics. The board has come back with a rearrangement of the topics, and let me tell you what they are, because that has just been finalized in the last bit of time. We did not intend to talk about CEO search because it is the subject of a public forum, but the board wants to talk about CEO search, what qualities we think we ought to be seeking in a new CEO, what are the criteria for openness, transparency, et cetera, in the hiring process, bearing in mind the responsibility for anonymity, privacy, board confidence. That topic will be kicked off, and then I have already identified, if I might, ICC had a position on that, so if we could, the CSG leadership would turn to you or Jeff to make a...
I've just confirmed with Jeff that he will do it.
Okay. Thank you. There will be somebody speaking on that from one of the other constituencies, and we'll find that out when we get there. The second topic is ethics guidelines. And again, this was not a topic that we proposed to talk about because we felt that the constituency should have Constituency Day fully to deal with that and to express their views as individuals in the public forum. I will just tell you that originally there was no public forum specific to ethics and integrity, but the request from the manager of public participation in requesting topics had so many requests for ethics and integrity it was being called conflict of interest guidelines in her original formulation. It has been changed, and it has been changed, as far as I can tell, driven by a couple of board members and by the chair. So we're talking about ethics guidelines. What are our top three concerns and proposals to address them within the confines of multi-stakeholder voluntary participation? I have been asked by the CEO leadership, the CSG leadership, to kick that topic off. Christina will follow up. She took a lead in the meeting between the council and the board. On the weekend, you may have heard that. she prefers not to say the same thing because I think one of the issues here is the board is very, to me, in my mind, although they're getting concerned, they're very confused. They are saying, well, you can't expect us to be here if we're not allowed to make a living. Not all of them, but some. Some are very concerned about the difference between you can have a conflict of interest, but there have to be safeguards, what's ethical behavior, whether you have a conflict or not. So it's there's a lot of groping around right now, but the board has gotten a lot of negative feedback about the fact that they voted on one small issue having to do with compensation and did not make it clear that they are taking the broader topic of ethics and integrity very seriously. So this is, to some extent, an effort to say we recognize it and we want to hear from you. You have the opportunity, you will be able to volunteer to comment. So if you want to tell me now that you want to comment, we can put you on the a list that I can say this person from this constituency, but you also can spontaneously raise your hand. And John, that's you too. The third one is something that we really need to, I'm just going to talk about it and combine three and four in our mind to a broader chapeau. The third one is one of the top three issues for the commercial stakeholder group for ICANN to address in the policy development work. The CSG leadership has agreed that one topic, and I will probably raise it, is that the board, in their infinite top-down wisdom, moved us into a hostile neighborhood. And in some cases, it isn't just that we can't get work done. It is that there is not a civil, mutually respectful environment that exists in order to allow people to work together, and that policy work is being stymied and prevented by the structural situation and the ability to block voting. We have a number of concerns about it. We mostly want to park that issue and note that we are severely disappointed and concerned about the breakdown and failure of the introduction of the new constituency, which would help to change the dynamics. It is merely a statement. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it, but it's felt very much that we're being told that we're not doing policy work, and we're going to be asked, so what are our top, the other two issues are, what are the policy priorities? So under that ABC, one is we've got a structural problem, and then if we could come back to what are the policy priorities. The fourth question is...
The third issue under top three issues is...
So there's four, right. There's four issues. I just described the third one and said, that could there be an ABC? And then there's a fourth issue, but I think it's very related, and that is... What are the top three messages that the CSG believes ICANN should be conveying in relation to new GTLDs? The CSG leadership and my conversations with some of you is that the communications plan must be equally, if not predominantly, focused on awareness about the impact on registrants and users and not on recruitment of applicants, and that there is a dearth of focus and appropriate information on the impact of this massive change. So that is a big message that we would all like to give and ask you to think about. And the second is that we're not done yet. And unless we, and this is where I want to come back to you, Steve, unless we address some of these elements that we still feel need to be addressed during the implementation plan, we have very strong concerns that the, even though the launch might take place, that it will be very troubled and potentially lead to premature failures and other problems. There's strong support for hearing that from at least four board members. A couple seem to have buyer's remorse from previous positions, and others are new and have very grave concerns and are asking to hear from us. It's a split board, so if we could just go to you. But those are the kind of topics that I, you know, I think... You're not done yet. The communications plan has to be expanded and changed.
But when let me ask you a clarification. It sounded to me like you said the fourth topic was the board says, what do you folks think are the top three messages we should convey to the world about the new GTLD program? So it's they're asking us for the sales pitch, the communications message. So we telling the board there's a lot of unfinished business isn't a message that, I mean, maybe it belongs in the third topic of top three issues in policy development.
Steve, we're in the implementation phase, and the feedback I have from Bruce is that it doesn't belong in policy development, that it is an implementation. If we're going to make any changes, it's an implementation. But that the issue, we have like only 5 minutes to kind of go back to the, and this, these two last questions are important. There is a group of companies who feel extremely strongly that they want to stop the program. That is not the position of the BC. The position of the BC has been to fix the remaining things that cause frailties or risk to the greatest extent possible. I'm not making a comment on whether that delays the launch date or not. I'm just focused on our official position. I'm not talking about your individual position. Our official position is you're not done yet, and that has still been where we are. Real quickly, I'll tell you that even the responsible registries are raising concerns about whether the program is complete enough to launch. But, Steve, can I go to you on some of the things we had asked for that could fit into, for example, this could still be done?
Great. I'm just going to refer folks to the white piece of paper that says the BC's key implementation points for GTLD expansion. I think everyone here at the table has it. Benny, was that circulated with the deck? Okay. So, John, I sent this to you last night. It was in the XCOM email. This is my best bet at organizing the points I've heard from BC members about elements of the new GTLD expansion that aren't finished yet. Ironically, there's not a particular order, so our goal is to try to figure out which are our top three themes or specifics that we would pull from this list if we get the opportunity during the board meeting that comes up to express what has to be fixed before GTLDs are actually deployed. So we could walk through this list, but I'll do it quickly. The vertical integration cross-ownership, staff admits that they still need to come up with the details on that, and I don't believe that's going to be a top priority for us. The second was enforcing restrictions proposed by an applicant. We learned on Saturday that if a registry restriction is proposed by an applicant, it's not enforceable by ICANN unless it makes it into the contract. So Kurt Pritz is very concerned about that, wants to meet and talk about it further this week. He says that is a glaring, gaping hole in the implementation. And it may mean that we need to shine a bright light that any time an applicant makes promises about how they're going to secure the space and restrict the registrants, promises are nice, but they're not enforceable if they're not in their registry contract. And that might be the way to solve that. And I think that may be, I can tell you this, staff was very attentive to this point when we brought it up over the weekend, so I bet the board would love to hear about it. And what do you think about bringing that up today?
Perfect.
Okay?
We'll come to you.
All right. The next two to go together, and this is something that Phil Corwin and a couple of other members have been really attentive to, standardizing the contract and the qualification standards for the vendors that ICANN picks for the UDRP and then, just as importantly, the URS, which is part of the new GTLD program. So combining those together into a contract standardization and qualification explicitly, does that elevate itself to a top priority that we want to mention during implementation today?
You know, just one minute, Phil. I'm gonna ask you to pick four, and rather than our debating them, if you would present them as examples, and because we're going to run out of time, and I want to come back to something else. I think that the issue of changing the operation, extending the availability of trademark claims perpetually, not just for a short period after sunrise, has always been on our priority list. But if you could pick the bundling of IDNs with ASCII and vice versa, and then this point about the RIA and the promises have to be in writing so that they're enforceable. If those are you could say these are examples, and then we will do more work on it. This is and come back to the that way we could work on this while we're here. And come back in writing, you could even read it out at the public forum.
Right, so we would discuss it today.
Discuss it today with the board, but then do a more formal readout. So let me just quickly read the four that Marilyn suggested as the priorities. This is just as I was about to turn to Phil to talk about his. But enforcing the second one on the bullet list was enforcing the registry restrictions. Number two is creating incentives for applicants to add versions in other scripts. The third was continuing to operate claims services after sunrise and make that a best practice if it can't be mandated. And the fourth is the entire set of bullets at the bottom, which we discussed at length this morning, which is the RAA amendments. We think those ought to be done before implementation, but I don't see how that's even feasible right now.
So my proposal is Steve will say this is a non-exhaustive list. We're giving you some examples. We think that these clearly are within the implementation realm. And rather than debating them or saying they have the full approval of all our members, say it's a non-exhaustive list so that we can just talk about one more thing before we walk out. And as you walk out, if you join Phil walking over there, maybe you could grab Phil's point too, because so we can – is that okay?
Yeah, I would like to try to mention, if we could squeeze it in, the standardization of contracts for UDRP and URS.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Just want to weigh in here for a second. On the URS contract, in earlier versions of the guidebook, they were quite explicit about that the URS providers would be under contract. I believe that explicit reference has disappeared, and well, I can go back and check, but it's that needs to be stressed. And also, you heard me ask Kurt the question at the GNSO meeting on Sunday whether they thought they could get credible providers at $300 a shot, and he said it's going to be a problem. So, and I think it's in everyone's interest, whether you're a registrant or a complainant, that the process be credible as it rolls out. I also just want to note in regard to implementation of the program that we know the advertising industry is out there saying stop the program, which is not our position. I don't think it's a credible position. But on Friday, the National Retail Federation, which is a very powerful organization and promotes e-commerce, sent a long letter to Larry Strickling saying we want a pause, some extra time for implementation because we have many unanswered questions about it among our members, and then their letter goes into those questions. So we're seeing, at least in Washington, pressure building for on-commerce anxiety about the program. Yeah, I will. Yes.
Okay, guys, we are walking out right now. If you're a member, please come with us. You will. It'll be a little chaotic when you get in there. Grab a seat. If you are able, the seating's a little weird in there. You'll see that when you get in there. Benny is staying here. If you leave your laptops, she will not leave the room. We're going to, Chris, we're going, Benny.
B-C-12. If you walk out of here, turn right and go all the way down the corridor, that's the
B-C-12,
room.
B-C-12, yeah.
That's
B-C-12
where we were last night.
Yeah.
So, Chris.
Where are we going? B what?
Tracy, you may pause the recording now. Thank you.
Guys, if you are leaving equipment here, you must leave it on the top of this table so Benny can see it. Don't leave it in a seat back there, okay?
Script.